can always tweet us at 99.3 ESPN Radio. We might even tweet you back. This is Scheman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Sing it, Paul. Give it to me.
No clue who this is.
Chris will be going on. If the time is right. Paul McCartney, Jet! How can you not get into this song, Chris? Of course, you don't acknowledge the Beatles at all or anything party, even though this is not
the
Beatles.
What? I realized that that take might have been slightly misplaced.
Well, thanks.
Oh, look, I can admit when I'm wrong, and I might have been wrong.
I actually want to see that movie yesterday.
I do, too, and that's what made me say, okay, maybe I was a little wrong about that.
I can just see you going to yesterday, and you're sitting there making fun of all the songs. This was a hit?
No, I was a little off base in my
just a little bit.
Beatles are overrated take.
We're going to check in with John McMullen on 97 from 97.3 FM at ESPN affiliate up in South Jersey. And speaking of Jet, probably talk about the Jets, I am sure. But before all that, I will not forget, it's time for Chris with a Sports Center rundown.
Oklahoma City has traded Russell Westbrook to the Houston Rockets in exchange for a boatload of picks. The Thunder now have two first-round draft picks and six of the next seven NBA drafts. The men's final at Wimbledon is set. Roger Federer defeated Rafa Nadal 3-1 earlier today to set up the final against Novak Djokovic. And Antoine Griezmann has signed with Barcelona for 120 million euros.
Oh, mercy.
Don't mock
That's
soccer.
A lot.
Don't mock it.
I'm not mocking you.
Oh.
I'm not, why would I mock it? Went through all the ESPY awards last night, you know, from yesterday, useless awards that go out, and it's so freaking fixed and politically correct.
No, it's a big deal. Antoine Griezmann,
yeah.
big-time French player that's been playing in Spain in the domestic league, and this kind of rules out Neymar, who a lot of people know, Neymar the Brazilian, who's in Paris right now, has been wanting to get his way back to Barcelona. This Griezmann deal pretty much nixes that. So where will Neymar go? Yet to be seen. And we've heard that Real Madrid won't make a deal for him. So maybe a Premier League team will try to make a move for Neymar. I'm looking at you, Manchester United. I'm looking at you.
Now, the next thing we're going to hear, I'm waiting for this argument. Could anyone from the women's national team play even in the MLS? Say the MLS.
Stop it. No.
I'm throwing it out there.
No.
We'll
played the Houston Dynamo under 16 team and lost. They played high schoolers and lost. Sorry.
All right. Shoot down my theory. I thought it might be an okay discussion. You know, considering
they're a good team. They're a good team. Not what I'm saying.
All right, joining us right now is John McMullen from 97.3 FM in South Jersey, our ESPN affiliate there. Talk some NFL. Hey, John, Pete Shepard and Chris in the house with you today. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, pleasure. All right, let's get into it right away. Yesterday, Chris and I started breaking down the AFC East and a little bit of the NFC West, but let's stick with the AFC East, and let's begin with the Jets, committed to $125.3 million. Expectations, I believe, are as high for the Jets as I can remember, maybe in about 8 or 9 years. Your thoughts on the organization right now, Adam Gase, Greg Williams, Dowell Logan, and the team?
Well, I think they have more talent than a lot of people realize, and that sort of comes with the part of drafting so high for so many years and being so bad for so many years. So all of a sudden you turn around and say, they got some pretty good players, especially when you talk about Sam Darnold and his potential and ceiling as quarterback, as number 3 overall pick, and then you look defensively, especially up the middle, Quinnen Williams, I thought was the best player in the draft this year. They had him to Leonard Williams. They signed C.J. Mosley. Mm-hmm. Jamal Adams is one of the best safeties in the league. The question is the organization. It's always been the organization. You see the power struggle that resulted in Adam Gase winning over Mike Maccagnan, who hired him, and they couldn't coexist for even a couple months together. And now Joe Douglas is there, great personnel mind. We'll see how it works out. I'm not a big fan of Adam Gase. I think he was a disaster in Miami. I think that's the biggest concern. I'm not sure they hired the right coach.
It is very very interesting, and that awkward opening press conference too was just, I don't know. And you know, down here in Southwest Florida, obviously I'm originally from New England. I've been down here for over 2 years now, and my man Chris right next to me, he's a huge Dolphin fan. What is it about Adam Gase though? Some people will say he was too loyal. He was too loyal to his quarterback down to Tannehill down here. That was his main issue. But what is it about Adam Gase, John, that rubs you the wrong way?
Well, I don't think he handles personalities well, and I think that is a bigger part of the job than people realize. We always get caught up in X's and O's, but everybody can scheme in this league. Everybody can watch film. Everybody can kind of figure that stuff out. And I get to see Doug Peterson every day, and I think that's his strength as a coach, is keeping everybody on the same page, moving towards the same goal. And when you're talking about 53 guys, 10 on the practice squad, you got more on injured reserve. The average NFL team's got 70 people in the locker room. They're not all going to get along. They're not all going to like each other. When you have a coach who can juggle that, you're ahead of the curve. I don't think Adam was good at that at all. You look at Ajay Ajayi, he basically threw him under the bus out of Miami. Mm-hmm. You look at how he handled Ndamukong Suh back in the day. There's a lot of complaints about how he handled people, and I think you see it already with the Jets. And the fact, as I said, he can't even get along with the guy who hired him. That's strange.
Absolutely is. And what about his relationship right now, from what you've seen with Joe Douglas? Is it any better?
Well, one of the reasons Joe is there is because he worked with Adam in Chicago, mm-hmm. and they got along together. But it was only a year. It's not like it was a long-term thing. So Adam pushed for Joe Douglas, and the fact that he had a great reputation anyway. So, I mean, now the microscope is on him even further, so to speak, because this is the guy he wanted. And now you went out and got him, and we'll see if he can get along. It's going to be interesting, as I said, to have more talent. I think Joe Douglas is going to get them more talent because he is great from a scouting standpoint moving forward. But we saw it in Houston as well. And you see constant power vacuums in this league where GMs can't get along with coaches and vice versa. It generally doesn't work out well, even for the winner, mm-hmm. because what happens is you lose your plausible deniability. So I look at Bill O'Brien in Houston, for instance. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody knows he forced out Brian Gaine now. So if things go wrong with the Texans, who are you going to blame? You're going to blame Bill O'Brien. And I saw it up close here in Philadelphia with Chip Kelly. That's exactly what his demise was.
Well, I'm going to get to Billy O'Brien and the non-GM factor in with the Texans in just a second. I am going to be interested. How many? What's the over-under before Adam Gase and Greg Williams butt heads and it goes public in the regular season? What do you think?
yeah, it's going to be pretty low. I would say definitely by midway through the season. And that's Greg Williams as well. He's got that reputation, and he's got that personality where he's going to butt heads at times. And you put two combustible egos like that into the same area. Yeah, something's going to happen. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The question is, can you fight through it? Can you stay on the same page? Because, I mean, people disagree all the time. You don't even have to get along with the people you work with. But you got to be mature about it, and you got to be able to work together. And I think that's the bigger issue.
A tough schedule for the Jets, I think, you know, out of the gate. I mean, the first five or six games. But I'm, you know, fans' expectations, and I have to tell you, John, up there, it's probably off the chart. I think a lot of people are probably thinking, with the talent on paper anyway, that they should compete for at least be in the hunt down the stretch for a wild card spot. But a lot of pressure on Sam Darnold, you know, Le'Veon Bell, and Adam Gase with the New York media. I think it's going to be a fascinating season for the Jets. And see how it all plays out, but early on, particularly.
I ripped him. Now I'm going to compliment him because one of the issues is it's a bad division. So you know New England's going to win it, and somebody's got to be in second place. And I think from a talent perspective, that should be the Jets in that division. And you start thinking about how the NFL playoff picture shapes up. If you're in a bad division that has bad teams, well, you have division games. You're going to have four of them against Miami, which has a bottom five roster in this league, and Buffalo, which is having some issues and sort of growing pains with a young quarterback. So if you're the New York Jets and you can get three out of four or even four out of four, guess what? Down the road, you're going to be in that wild card hunt for that second spot. So there's some opportunity for them. And as I said, I think a lot of it will have to do with how Sam Darnold develops as a second-year quarterback. I do think he has a high ceiling, but we have to see it.
You just touched on Billy O'Brien and the Houston Texans and how they do not have a GM and the whole Nick Caserio thing. Depending on who you believe was frightfully botched, and it may come to fruition next season. Maybe that's just they're holding out. But it is kind of rare in this day and age in the NFL that you don't have a guy that's calling the shots here. Or is it, like you said, is Billy O'Brien, is he running the whole shebang here?
Yeah, he is. And, hey, people do that. Bill Belichick does it. Pete Carroll does it. And they do it successfully. I think people get caught up in titles. And when you hear GM, it doesn't really matter as far as who's in charge, whether it's the head coach, the general manager. But they got to work together, and that's what I said. They have to have a good working relationship. So if you're Bill Belichick, there's not enough time in the day to do scouting when you're in season, and you got to prepare for the next opponent. So you have to delegate, and you have to delegate to people you trust and get along with. And ultimately, in any organization, the buck stops with somebody. So that's not the issue. The issue is, can you delegate properly? Can you get along with the people you have to work with? Can you trust them? And is everybody working towards that same goal? As I said, some head coaches like Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll have that kind of power. Use it well. More that have that kind of power have not used it well. And we'll see where Bill O'Brien lands.
Speaking with John McMullen here on the Sheeman and Shepherd program on 97, and John from 97.3 FM up in South Jersey. I wanted to touch on, get your thoughts on two teams down here with the Dolphins and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I want to start with the Bucs and Bruce Arians. And certainly, to me, this is, if this guy, along with Byron Leftwich, if they can't get inside Jameis Winston's head and make this a positive, then you got to move on, right? I mean, this is it. It's time is now.
Yeah, I agree. Last chance, and it's difficult because it's a difficult division. But I will say you have in Tampa now. You've got a powerhouse of a coaching staff, and it's not only Bruce Arians. He's a two-time coach of the year. He's a great head coach. But you also bring in Todd Bowles. You also bring in Keith Armstrong to run special teams. They have one of the best coaching staffs in the NFL, and that's the kind of cachet that Bruce Arians has and his ability to get good assistant coaches So that's going to be very, very helpful, number one. But, yeah, from Jameis's standpoint, I mean, you can't call it anything other than a disappointment. I still think people are holding out hope and look at his arm talent and look at his ability and say, maybe somebody like Arians, who's been a quarterback whisperer in the past, can help him turn that corner. And I do think this is his last chance. Unfortunately for them, we just talked about a bad division. They're in a good division. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is look at the quarterbacks of the rest of the teams in that division. Drew Brees, who's going to Canton, obviously. You got Matt Ryan's a former MVP. Cam Newton's a former MVP. That's tough.
No, no question. It's just been, you know, if you're a Bucs fan and there's been so much offensive talent on that team. I love the fact that one of the few teams that can go into that double tight end formation and do some serious damage if Jameis can just hang on to the damn ball or not throw a pick, especially how many turnovers in the red zone over the last several years. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And it makes the defense, I think, gets a bad reputation because of how bad the offense have played at times over the last several years in the end zone. In the red zone.
Yeah, I mean, those two things go hand in hand. Obviously, if you turn the football over in key situations, coaches constantly talk about situational football, and I can tell you that Bruce Arians will be drilling that into Jameis's head. Live to play another down. Sometimes you got to take a field goal. You don't want to force the football when you have points. So it's a delicate balance, and that's what great quarterbacks do. Jameis hasn't been able to do it, but you're right. I mean, there's plenty of talent, especially at receivers. You mm-hmm. mentioned the tight ends.
Yeah,
you have
Mike Evans.
O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate, mm-hmm. but also Mike Evans and a lot of people in this league, like Chris Godwin, and mm-hmm. think he's going to take the next step as well. So they got good receivers. They got good tight ends. There's not much more you can ask for as a quarterback, and Jameis has got to put up or shut up. This will be his last opportunity.
And then going back to the AFC East with the Miami Dolphins, Brian Flores coming from the Patriots, new OC with Chad O'Shea, Patrick Graham will be the defensive coordinator. They have Josh Rosen sitting there waiting in the wings. I don't think I don't know if he's going to beat out Ryan Fitzpatrick in preseason, but who the hell knows? But how do you think initially, no expectations for the Dolphins whatsoever. I like Brian Flores a lot, but we've seen what happens. The descendants from the Belichick tree, besides Billy O'Brien, doesn't usually work out. But I think Brian Flores has a chance here. I do. I love it. I love his attitude. And where do you see him, his leadership with the Dolphins? The Dolphins, do you think, are going to be better or worse than most people have predicted, which is really dead last in the league, I think, for most?
Yeah, I mean, I almost think they are going to be a little bit better because, as I said, most people look at that team, and if you're going to rate people talent-wise, they're certainly going to be bottom five, and you're going to argue some people, and I would argue they might be number 32. I mean, that's how bad it is, and that's how bare the cupboard was when Brian Flores got the job. I think it's a great hire, but they do have to strip down, and it's going to take a while. And there are no more five-year plans in the modern NFL, so you got to get it going quicker than that. I think the hope is Ryan Fitzpatrick is what he is. He's a great bridge quarterback, but you know he's a bridge quarterback. Mm-hmm. And the ultimate goal has to be Josh Rosen. If it's not Josh Rosen, you got to get somebody else next year, and they should be certainly picking in the top five. So they should be able to turn it around pretty quickly. This year, though, I think you're going to see some ugly moments. I really do. And we just talked about Adam Gase earlier. Mm-hmm. He didn't leave a great situation there for Brian Flores. And it's time to clean up the mess. And I think they'll start going in the right direction. But as I said, there's going to be some ugly moments.
Do you think Josh Rosen can succeed? I hate to use the word system. I really hate that word when it comes to the NFL. But can Josh Rosen succeed, do you think, on this football team under Brian Flores and Chad O'Shea? Eventually. Not right away, but eventually. Because last year was a disaster. And I cut him a ton of slack last year in Arizona. That was a horrible situation. I don't even look at those numbers. I think he's going to be much better than that. But how do you think he's going to fare under Flores and Chad O'Shea down here?
No, I think that's the thing Dolphins fans should be most excited about. They were able to get a top 10 quarterback for pennies on the dollar because of the disaster that was Arizona and the strange way Steve Kahn's gone about his business. The fact that you trade up for a guy and then you give up on him a year later, even though you had maybe the worst offensive line in football, you blew out the head coach after 1 year, and you bring in another head coach who only wants one quarterback, and that was Kyler Murray. So the stuff in Arizona has nothing to do with Josh Rosen, and the Dolphins were able to get him for an unbelievable price. And that guy, it's not like Arizona was the only team that thought he was a top 10 level talent. I mean, everybody in this league had him right about there. So the talent remains. You hope there's not too many scars from such a bad rookie season because that can affect players, no doubt. Remember David Carr in Houston, mm-hmm. Being behind a terrible offensive line basically ruined his career before it got started. So you hope he can recover from that. If he can, I think it was a great move by the Dolphins. He doesn't need to be ready week one. I'd hope to see him out there at some point this season, and I think he will.
All right, John, thanks so much for taking a few minutes on this Friday. Really, I really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll talk to you down the road soon.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, that's John McMullen from 97.3 FM in South Jersey, up that way. Talking, he's in touch with the entire NFL. He's great. He's locked into to everybody, but short amount of time here, so I wanted to get his thoughts on Tampa Bay and Miami. We'll have him on again during the regular season. Sheeman and Shepard rolling along here on a Friday. 99.3 ESPN. The phone number is 239-337-3776, 239-337-3776. Pete Shepard here with you, along with Chris. Craig will be back on Monday. Don't forget, on Monday, SEC Media Day. We will have a lot of coverage for you. Dan Mullen is going to speak in the 2 o'clock hour. We'll play everything he says back for you. We're carrying the Gators this year. Felipe Franks is going to speak, and a few other players as well. So we'll keep you posted on everything that's going on at SEC Media Day right outside of Birmingham, Alabama. But your phone calls next, 239-337-3776. We're still big trade. Russell Westbrook and Chris Paul, we're talking about that and a whole lot more. When Sheeman and Shepard continues with Chris on 99.3 ESPN and 99.3 ESPN app.
Facebook has turned into a platform where anyone can spew nonsense. Sounds like these guys. Like our Facebook page, 99.3 ESPN Radio. This is Sheeman and Shepard.
Back here at Sheeman and Shepard, it's Friday!
Woo-hoo-hoo!
What's up? What's up, crazies? What's up for the weekend, everybody? Maybe a little rain here and there. Chris has got his entourage all ready to go. Man, they're outside. I saw the whole... How many boxes of books are you bringing for this book tour?
Like four?
No, it's like 4,000 there.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm bringing with me, then shipping the rest.
Yeah, and that'll be great. And a multi-platform media tour that you're going on, starting in Paris. And you're going to be like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, even though you're in Europe, even though you've never seen the great movie. But you're going to be, you're going to be flying, you're going to be on a train, you're going to be driving. No?
No driving, no trains. I'll be on a boat. That'll be pretty cool.
So you're yachting?
Sure, that's what we'll call it. We'll call it yachting. Yachting.
Yachting, cruising.
Going on a cruise, whatever
huge.
You want to call it.
Yep.
I do have a balcony room.
Of course you do.
Well, I mean, that's the.
Well, you're going to have. You can't have breakfast on a balcony on the water.
I've gone on many a cruises and many a times I've had an interior room. I actually think that there are some positives that come with an interior room, particularly when you're going without children and you're hungover the next day every day. You're in total darkness. It's great.
Yeah, but it's nice to have when you're cruising
a nice
breakfast outside.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I find it hard to believe if someone of your stature would not like a, you know.
Strip down naked?
Whatever.
That's never a nice coffee out on the.
Yeah. Nothing like nudeness and coffee.
Oh, it's the
best.
You
know, on a Monday morning. It's disturbing visuals all over the place. We got some football news to tell you about. We just talked about the Jets. They're in a little bit of trouble. They just lost their starting tight end, Christopher Herndon IV. Kid out of Miami, by the way. Second-year player, I believe. But what happened with him, Chris?
Suspended 4 games. Let me pull up the tweet right here, if I can find it. And, of course, it's gone away. Here we go. 4-game suspension. I believe it was violation of the PED.
Yeah.
Substance abuse
policy.
It takes away pretty much any pass-catching option for the Jets, the other tight ends on their roster. Eric Tomlinson, Daniel Brown, and rookie Trevon. Maybe it's Trayvon?
Trayvon Wesco.
Wesco.
Yeah.
And all three are more blockers than they are pass-catching tight ends.
So now you get more pressure on guys like Robbie Anderson, Quincy Enunwa, Jamison Crowder out there, and obviously Le'Veon Bell. You got to figure he's going to get 30 touches a game, at least initially. I don't know if he wants 30 touches a game, but I think they're going to have to. We'll see. We'll see what happens with the Jets and Sam Darnold and Adam Gase. And we talked about their schedule, and we just had John McMullen on from up that way. And I'm just telling you, I think Greg Williams is going to pin him, lock him, throw him in a locker. There's going to be a lot of friction with that Jet team this year, I think, from start to finish, especially if they don't get out of the gate and play. I mean, they got 1-5 or 2-4 written all over that team to start. And I don't see Adam Gase handling the media pressure up there particularly well.
No.
I just don't see it. Now, if they get off to a real good start and they start to overdo, that's a different story, as it always can be. But I got to believe Greg Williams and Adam Gase history. I don't think that's going to end particularly well.
It's already started. Coming off of Jets Wire, which covers the Jets for USA Today, this was an article put out on February 4th. Adam Gase and Greg Williams only been working together for a few weeks, but there's already friction between them, according to ESPN's Rich Cimini. Williams was not happy that Gase and GM Mike Maccagnan, who's not there anymore,
not there anymore,
won't hire Blake Williams, Greg's son.
Well,
now that it did come to a head where I believe they did hire him, but that was 3 days after a hire was official.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Jets. And as John said,
yeah,
their roster looks good. It looks like they've got a dominant player at every level of the defense. They've got the wide receivers, not the best wide receiver group in the NFL, but serviceable.
Yep.
They've got a really good running back. They got a quarterback that I think was probably the second best rookie last year outside of Baker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of positives, but ultimately, it's the Jets and, you know, Dolphins and Pats fans sitting here. We know it's just a matter of time before they mess it up somehow. It's going to happen. It's what the Jets do.
It is happening. It is happening. And I am going to be fascinated and very curious to see how Adam Gase handles everything right out of the chute.
Well, and if just looking at his time in Miami, the way it seemed to the fan base, if Adam Gase had a problem with you, it was not in his DNA to pull you aside and try to work it out. It was, I got a problem with you, I'm going to trade your ass out of town. I don't care how talented you are, which works up to a point. You have to earn a lot of respect around the league before you pull that type of move.
Yeah.
Bill Belichick pulls that move. Pete Carroll can pull that move. Coaches that have shown that they can win come January and into February, they can do that. Adam Gase cannot do that. Adam Gase has all of his clout because he worked with Peyton Manning. And Jay Cutler had one good year under him.
In Chicago, yeah.
In Chicago, not in Miami.
Yeah, as when he was OC.
Yeah, I mean, look, I really like the Jets roster. I do. It's the
On paper, it looks good. It absolutely does.
It's the coaching staff and the front office. I mean, we saw it when they fire. You let Mike Maccagnan go out, hire the head coach. You force a defensive coordinator on the head coach. Mm-hmm. And then Chris Johnson, the de facto owner right now, goes out and fires Mike Maccagnan after that? It makes no sense.
No. Well, and somehow Gase got to the owner and got to because of Douglas. Because as John was pointing out, I mean, that's his buddy. Better work out. Same thing in Houston, Billy O'Brien. Better work out. We got some college football news to tell you about as well. I'm not happy about it because I hate what it has to do with Southern Cal. And it's not about them specifically. It's not about who's on the team. But it's shift in philosophy, which I hate.
Yep, USC, their official athletic, at USC underscore athletics, they put out their home games in 2021 and 2023. Games that will be played, you know, at, what's it, United Airlines Field at the Coliseum, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Well, they are going out and they are scheduling, for the first time ever, an FCS opponent. They're going to play UC Davis along with Nevada and San Jose State.
And, well, I mean, Nevada's Division I team.
No. UC Davis is an FCS school. Yeah,
San Jose State is worse than UC Davis.
They're
worse.
They are, but they're at least an FBS team.
Yeah, barely.
For those of you who don't,
barely.
1A versus 1AA. Yeah. So this is USC, Southern Cal for the first time in that program's history going out, and they're taking a page out of the SEC's playbook. They're scheduling a 1,000%, not 100%, a 1,000% win going up against UC Davis, the Anteaters? I believe they're the Anteaters?
I believe you are correct, yes.
So.
Great.
Look, until the College Football Playoff Committee starts holding it against teams for not scheduling tougher, I don't blame them. Now, I understand where your frustration comes in, because that's a week where it doesn't matter if USC is the number one team in the country, which could happen 3-4 years mm-hmm. from now. And there's a week where it's just a throwaway game. No need to watch that team. I understand that frustration, but I also understand the university saying, no, we're not going to go out and schedule somebody where we might catch them on their off year, where, you know, like Richmond did to Virginia Tech last year, although Richmond's FCS as well. But I'm not going to go out and schedule that.
No, you mean Old Dominion.
Old Dominion, I'm sorry. Yeah, Old Dominion. I understand it. I get it. And I understand the other side, people like you, Pete, who have a problem with it.
I have a major problem with it. I mean, it's bad enough you're scheduling San Jose State. That's fine. Schedule another type of team like that. Go play Eastern Michigan or something like that. I say it all the time. I cannot stand these Power 5 schools scheduling FCS. It's absolutely ridiculous. And don't tell me about money going, you know, somebody's friend is the coach or the AD at another school. I know a lot of that does come into play. It's a waste of everybody's time. Waste of time.
It is.
And in Alabama, you can't get people to go to a Vanderbilt game, let alone an FCS game.
Right. And I hear the argument. I understand the argument. But I also don't blame the universities for scheduling these games.
How is it going to help them? It doesn't help recruiting. Not going to help you in the poll system. It ain't going to help you. Those wins mean nothing. Nothing. Anybody who takes that into consideration, you're crazy. Unless you lose.
That's where I think you're wrong, Pete. It does help you because it's a win. And until we start to see teams getting penalized for playing these games. Because, okay, so Alabama's ranked number one, or Alabama will probably be number two in the country at the start of the year. All right, they play Duke week one, and then I'm sure they have some cupcake FCS opponent week two. Unless Alabama drops from number two to number three with a win, it didn't hurt Alabama. Did it help them a ton? No, but it didn't hurt Alabama at that point. It won't hurt USC.
Well, wait, Alabama doesn't play that game, though. It's the second last game of the year, though, that cream puff game. That doesn't come early on, right?
But my point, it doesn't matter when the game is played. The point is, it doesn't hurt these schools to go out and play them. And until the college football playoff poll, I don't even care about AP or the coaches poll. Until the college football playoff committee starts to hold those games against these teams, nothing will change.
Here's the other thing, the problem I have with these FCS scheduling. UC Davis, you want to schedule these teams? Show me North Dakota State. Show me Eastern Washington. Show me Weber State. Show me South Dakota State. James Madison, Princeton, Jacksonville State. Teams that actually some people might know.
Okay, so,
I don't want to hear about UC Davis. Let North Dakota State come up and play you.
Auburn.
Because you lose. Dakota State will beat them.
Auburn scheduled Jacksonville State a few years ago. Jacksonville State went into Auburn and damn near won that football game.
I know.
Would I schedule them?
Because
I don't have to.
I know you don't have to, but those are the type. If you're going to schedule, at least schedule some of the top 15 teams. I mean, you're not. I don't know how you're gaining any fans. I don't know how you're gaining any media friends. When you're voting in the polls, and I see games against FCS opponents. If I saw North Dakota State or like Jacksonville State or South Dakota State, James Madison, some of the teams. I mean, UC Davis was ranked 10th last year, I think. So. That's not too bad. UC Davis, mark that game down. I'll bet you, now that I'm looking at it, I'm looking at their record. They were 9-2 last year. So that's not, at least they're a top 10 team that USC scheduled.
So Eastern Washington this year is at Washington mm-hmm. to open up the season.
That's a good game.
And then the Gators will open up with them in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Oregon opens up with them in 2022, or doesn't open up with them, probably week two. Looking at the date on it. But, I mean, it happens where those schools get play, but if you're U.S., you are Southern Cal.
I know.
I mean, are one of the five prominent college football programs in the country. You're the attraction. It's not bringing in a quality opponent to garner more fan bases. No, you're gaining more fans every single week, every single year, because you've got a single-digit number next to your name, and you know that if you're a fan of that team, you're going to be playing meaningful football in November.
What's a better win for USC, scheduling UC Davis or scheduling, say, Buffalo's actually good now, or I always bring this, Eastern Michigan. What's better? What looks better for them?
It doesn't matter.
I think it does.
I don't think it matters.
You don't think it matters playing a Division I school over an FCS school? It would matter to me if I was voting.
I think that the benefits outweigh the negative side of this argument. Because if
what are the benefits? Because you get an extra
win
against what should be an incredibly a Power Five school playing a FCS school. I don't think a win doesn't mean a lot to me at all.
It doesn't mean a lot.
I'd rather see them get upset by an Eastern Michigan, a Division I school. They can look a lot worse getting upset by an FCS school.
But until
despite the ranking of UC Davis being 10th last
I mean, until we're holding these big time power programs, Alabama, Clemson, Southern Cal,
any of the Power Five
Ohio
schools,
State, any of those big time programs. Until we're going to start docking them in the polls because they simply went out and played the game, nothing's going to change. Like, that's what it's going to have to be. It's going to have to be the College Football Playoff Committee after Alabama blows out the Citadel in the penultimate week of the season. And then if Alabama had played that game last year, right? Like, this was the perfect scenario. Alabama was, at the end of last year, thought to be head and shoulders above everybody else. Even a forehead above Clemson.
Yep.
Citadel was within, they had what, a 2-point, 3-point lead at halftime?
I was with you. They were ahead at the half.
No, we were texting each other.
Oh, were we texting each other?
Yeah, so they were ahead at the half.
Oh, yeah, Craig and I think we're doing something.
They were ahead at the half.
Yeah, yeah.
Alabama came out in the second half, kind of punched them in the mouth, ended up winning by like, a, I don't know, 24, 28 points, whatever it was. But Alabama stayed at number one. Like, whoever Clemson played that week was a hell of a lot better than the Citadel.
But Alabama also played their seventh string. No, I mean, that's the thing.
Not to start the game.
No, not to start the
not
game.
To start but that's my point here is Alabama went out against a very poor opponent, played like dog
played
crap
right down
in the
to their
first
level,
half, played down to their level, Second half played a little bit better. And what happened to them in the polls? They stayed right at number one.
Yep.
And that and like if that
and Nick Saban complained and nobody went to the game.
Right.
You know.
Right. But that and but that's a problem kind of specific to Alabama.
They it's a problem for a lot of schools playing these FCS schools. I think attendance
but Alabama has an attendance problem when they play the and bottom of the barrel SEC.
Yes, I know, exactly.
That fan base fan base I cheer with has become very spoiled over the last decade.
Wine and cheese crowd. Not quite that yet.
Not yet.
But yeah.
Dang, it's close.
Yeah.
But that's the Tar Heels.
All right. When we come back, more college football news to tell you about, some ACC news to tell you about as well. Sheeman and Shepherd program rolls along. We're here until 6, always live and local, 2 to 6, Monday through Friday. Your phone calls, welcome us to 239-337-3776, 239-337-3776. Sheeman and Shepherd with Kristen in the house, Rick Church producing today on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Check out whatever ridiculous Twitter poll we're running at 99.3 ESPN Radio. Now it's Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN.
Been a long, lonely time. Right, Rick? Back with Sheeman and Shepherd rolling along here on a Friday. One more day off for Craig. Well, counting the weekend, 3. But Craig Sheeman will be back on Monday with me for the first time in, seems like a month, like 3 weeks. Chris, though, in the house today, and very astute, very vigilant, much more in tune with radio and life in general than I thought.
I'm looking at memes right now.
Are you looking at memes?
Yeah, and I know you got some college football stuff.
Yeah, we'll consider it for next hour.
There's a Facebook group that's been put together.
A Facebook what?
Facebook group.
Oh, group, okay.
Yeah, that... maybe it's not Facebook. Anyway, there's a group of people.
Yeah, just make it up.
That are planning on September 20th meeting outside of Area 51 and then storming the gates.
Oh, that I'm sure that works out really well. Of course, Area 51, if you don't know, out in the Midwest, is where they keep all the hidden UFOs.
So 10,500 say that they're going.
And how many will get through that massive secure electric fence, not to mention, that'd be trying to break into Fort Knox.
Here's the thing. 10,500, yeah, I think that they could could probably handle that. There's 19,800 that are interested. I think if you can get that half of those people coming in, 20,000?
Now, let me ask you this. Is this part of the story? Their purpose is what? There'll be drones flying around there. I mean, they'll be shot at if need be. They will be.
Yes, they will be.
Unfortunately.
Rubber bullets.
They'll be shot before they even get close.
Yes.
That place is surrounded by miles of desert.
I don't think people realize.
And security.
It. Yeah. And what is their call? They want to go like make Independence Day 3.
You know, I don't know why this is. There's the details. We're going to meet Storm Area 51, Friday, September 20th at 3 a.m. They can't stop all of us. Here's the details.
So if you're one of the ones that gets killed, good for you.
They can't stop them. They can only hope to contain them.
We will all meet up at the Area 51 Alien Center tourist attraction and coordinate our entry if we... Can I say this on air? Naruto run? What is Naruto run? N-A-R-U-T-O?
That's the name of a Japanese animated series.
Oh, yes, yeah.
My son used to enjoy.
Okay, I don't understand
what
that is.
I don't know what that is either.
Why are you telling the government your plan to invade Area 51?
If we all Naruto run, we can move faster than their bullets. Let's see some aliens.
Naruto run, is that the guys that can like climb walls like Spider-Man?
Yeah, There was a movie, Sky Jumpers or something like that.
I don't understand why you tell the government you're planning to invade.
Well, they didn't tell the government. They put it on Facebook.
We just
That's not monitored.
Of course, people don't think Area 51 is anything else, but there's all sorts of stories of what Area 51 actually is. We all know it's.
Oh, there's a great documentary on Netflix about it.
I've seen it.
I fell asleep during it last weekend.
It's great stuff. All right, we're getting into that a little bit more. I want to actually get into that a little bit. And
I'm fascinated by extraterrestrial life.
What you would find in Area 51, despite what we saw in both Independence Day movies that were, 20 years apart or 10 years apart?
The first one was much better than the second.
Totally agree. All right, got some ACC football news to tell you about and their media day schedule as well. Tell you what Coach Taggart and Coach Diaz are going to speak. We still got lots more to discuss about Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook and that monster deal that happened last night. All part of Sheeman and Shepherd Wikipedia as well at 4:45 next hour. The genre of the Wikipedia will be, I guess, European history because Chris is going on a book tour. And the best tweet of the day I've seen, James in Lehigh says, "I'm so out of the loop," and he's serious. "How does Chris have a book tour?" I'll explain you how. I just activated Siri. And it says, "Are you serious? How does Chris have a boy?" That's what I thought I said.
No, it's a Siri. It's a book tour. Hey, Siri.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I just messed with everybody.
No, yeah, she's listening, but you're not responding properly. All right, Go away. All right, when we come back, hour number three of Sheeman and Shepherd, Pete in the house with Chris, Rick Church producing 239-337-3776 on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.